On a clear February morning in 1897, as British forces sacked Benin City, Monier's wife went into labor. Monier and his wife lived in the town of Anyomauku, which, heading east, was a morning's walk to the River Niger, and heading west, an 8-hour walk to the Kingdom of Benin. 48 hours after her water broke, the Kingdom of Benin was a pile of smoking ruins, and Monier's wife was dead. A few hours after their daughter was born, Monier's wife smiled weakly at her husband, saying,
"She is so beautiful, Adaoma."
She gasped a little.
"I'm tired. I need to sleep. Please promise me that you will take good care of her."
"Of course, I will. We will," said Monier. "We'll both take good care of Adaoma together. Just get some rest and build up your strength."
He reached his hand out and gently held her right hand, trying to keep the panic coursing through his body out of his voice. The midwife had told him that she'd lost too much blood. His wife gripped his hand for a few seconds and then let go. Closing her eyes, she drifted off to sleep. She never woke up. Monier had made a small fortune from a handful of cows, a sizable number of goats, and an oil palm plantation. None of this was a consolation in the wake of his wife's passing. Friends urged him to send the baby away as a bearer of bad luck, but Monier couldn't exile his wife's face, her smile. His sister was still with milk for her 18-month-old son and became her niece's wet nurse, strapping Adaoma to her back as she carried out her daily chores. Despite long hours of hard work, Monier found time to play with his daughter every day, marveling at her soft skin, her dimples, the way she grabbed her heels and gummed her toes when she was hungry, instead of crying. She was a reincarnation of the woman who pushed her out. The only reminder left to him, and he so wanted to remember. 2 new wives and 7 more children, 5 boys and 2 girls, did little to diminish the memory of his first wife, the near worship of his first child. The first time Adaoma got married, Monier made sure the world knew he was parting with a jewel. Adaoma spied Onuchi, her future husband, at her very first Egunwa outing in Anyomauku, a few months after her 14th birthday. Her little brothers and sisters had been put to bed. They trailed her everywhere she went when they were awake. The moon was almost dazzling in its brilliance as she skipped from her father's compound of mud-walled homes to the community square to meet her best friend, Ngoli. Ngoli was half a year older and had been going to Egwonwa for over 3 months, but Adaoma was not allowed to join the monthly, moonlit gathering of young people because she was not yet of age. Her period hadn't made an appearance until now. She had prayed daily for it to arrive, and when it finally did, she ran, overjoyed, to find Ngoli.
"It has finally come!"
Ngoli understood immediately. She jumped up and clapped.
"Somebody will be singing at Egunwa soon!"
Then she grabbed Adaoma's hands and improvised a little dance. As Adaoma walked toward the gathering area, a night breeze stirred, bringing down the temperature from what had been a scorching hot day. Her spirit was buoyed by the sounds of crickets chirping and toads croaking, and she started to hum. She always felt inspired by nature, hearing music in the rustle of the trees and the gurgle of water from streams. She would belt out whatever tune came to her mind hearing those notes. The moon illuminated the way, no need for a palm oil lamp to guide her. She felt all grown up. Anyomauku people rose and went to bed with the rising and setting of the sun. Without the arrival of her period and Egunwa, she would have been asleep by now.